Welcome to Design Downtime, the podcast where we celebrate the joys of living a balanced creative life. I'm your host, Guy Siegel, a design director in Toronto, Canada, and I invite you to join me on this journey as we redefine what it means to be a successful design professional. Let's break free from the shackles of hustle culture and embrace the full spectrum of human experience, because life is too precious to be spent only in pursuit of productivity. Today, I'm excited to be talking with Cheryl Platz. Cheryl is an internationally renowned interaction designer, game designer, teacher, writer, and actress, best known for her innovative work in a variety of industries, ranging from video games to B2B cloud platforms, and from consumer products to global philanthropy. Her design work has empowered billions of customers with fun, creativity, immersion, and sometimes just a little less friction at the office, thanks to her work on some of the world's biggest products, including Amazon's Alexa and Echo Look, Microsoft Windows and Cortana, the Disney Parks PhotoPass system, the Sims family of games, and Microsoft's Azure platform. Her recent roles include Director of Experience Design for Marvel Strike Force at Scopely, and Director of User Experience for the Player Platform at Riot Games. Cheryl is also an adjunct faculty member teaching the craft of video game development and design at Carnegie Mellon University's Masters in Entertainment Industry Management program. Through her design education company, IdeaPlatz, Cheryl has delivered talks and workshops on 5 continents and over a dozen countries. Her first book, Design Beyond Devices, Creating Multimodal Cross-Device Experiences, is the manual for those who aspire to design the Starship Bridge of their dreams. And her newest book, tentatively titled Enduring Play, Creating Video Games That Thrive, is the design manual for anyone looking to build engaging video games with a holistic understanding of player needs, basic game design, the production process, and modern business considerations in the video game industry. Cheryl can be seen streaming most weeks on Sunday mornings answering game development and UX design questions at her Twitch channel. Cheryl, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for the lovely introduction. I'm so happy to be here, Guy.
It's a pleasure having you. And you want to talk to us today about live streaming.
Yes. So this is a journey I don't think I ever expected to be on. But one thing you didn't mention is I also, in a past life, was a professional actor. And long story short, that led me in 2016 to an opportunity to co-star in what was called sort of an actual play RPG on a network called Hyper RPG on Twitch. And Twitch is a broadcast platform which was created basically to stream gaming. What was unique about that particular experience was I was an improv actor, but I'm also a RPG gamer. You know, at the time I was doing a lot of like playing Dungeons and Dragons with my friends. And this was an opportunity for me and a group of friends I already gamed with to perform for people while playing a gaming character, an RPG gaming character. Now, for some people in the audience, that model is probably very familiar to them if they're fans of Critical Role. And it's funny because the show I was in was actually created by one of the original showrunners for Critical Role. The thing about that show was we did that for about 18 months. We did 65 episodes, like 250 hours of live stream content. So I have a lot of stories to share there. But it was a gift that kept on giving because my fans on the show kind of encouraged me to, I sort of started experimenting with streaming solo because my little brother, Vasco the Gamer, as his title on Twitch is, had been streaming for a while on Twitch. It seemed like something I could do. And they had this competition at the time on Twitch where like a creative competition. And so at the time, it was a really good excuse for me to practice my puppetry. So I started doing my own Twitch channel with puppets and Shakespeare. And the weird thing was people showed up. But when the contest ended, I did not win awards for my puppet reciting Shakespeare. That was shocking. But the audience that came had already like created a little Discord and made me the leader. And we had this community. And so I expanded into streaming video games. Well, although we always start with a half hour of like puppetry for those who are fans of my puppet Sprinkles, who's declared herself queen of this office. And we've been doing that since 2016. So a long time. And I've had, I'm so grateful for this journey. It's restored my faith in the internet in a way I didn't think was possible. And it's given me these connections with people I may never, some of whom I've met in person from a variety of other countries, some of whom I may never meet, but I really value and have learned a ton from. And it harkens back to my days as a teenager, like doing dial-up bulletin board systems, but in a much more, I have lots more Pikachu emotes now.
It's really interesting. I'd love, there's so much to talk about there. Let's start with the simple question, sprinkles.
The simple question. Well, yeah. So she's, it's a shame it's not a video podcast. I'd bring her out, but it sort of dives back to another story in my past, and we may be on a little bit of a tangent, but when I was growing up, when I was 6 months old, the way my mother tells it is when we were flipping through the channels, I made it very clear we would not switch past Big Bird. The Muppets, like I imprinted on them then. And my obsession with Sesame Street led to me reading at like 18 months. Like I was so the Muppets have always been a big part of my life. And I happened to grow up down the street from a Sesame Street theme park, the only one in the country for decades. And I was a performer and I auditioned and I got a job at the Sesame Street themed park. So my first job was as a teenage Muppet. I played about a dozen characters, give or take. The ones I played most frequently were Grover, Elmo, Bert, Ernie, Cookie Monster. There were some more rare ones. And many of them were full body costumes, but some were the more traditional puppets like Oscar. You play Oscar in the parade and you'd be up in a can like a foot off the ground. That had given me a basic introduction to puppetry. And suddenly the thing that other people did was something I could do, which is a theme of my life. I thought that game design was something other people did. I thought the puppetry was something other people did. Fast forward to 2010, I went through a big breakup and I had disposable income and there was a masterclass on puppetry in Seattle. So I spent a whole weekend learning television puppetry and they had puppets that I could, that the person had created for the class that you could purchase. And he had worked with like Sesame Street Muppets and stuff. I'm like, well, I'm going to take some of these home. I don't know how I'm going to use them, but I will use them. So I bought two puppets from this class and they had kind of been, I just had never found the right platform for using them. And then, you know, this live stream show comes and they slide into our inbox. They're like, hey, I'm a producer from Los Angeles. We found your improv group that likes to play Dungeons and Dragons together. Would you like to get paid to perform together every week? At first, we thought that was like a trap, but when we realized it was not, this channel launched with a big marathon. And I was like, well, we have 24 hours of content to fill. I'll just bring my puppets. And that was my first time doing puppetry in front of other people, was on a live stream with like hundreds or thousands of viewers. And that's where I kind of found her name and I kind of found her voice. And then that story kind of went. And so what's interesting about Sprinkles, aside from the fact that people still like want to see her after all this, is you know from improv you have to make a strong choice for things to be interesting, right? Like if Sprinkles is just sort of, oh hi everybody, how you doing, it wasn't going to be the most interesting. And you know, I certainly grew up on a heavy diet of classic Muppets and things like Miss Piggy, and so for Sprinkles, I kind of channeled the hyper-confidence that sometimes I wished I had. She knows what she is. She knows what she wants, but in a way that passes the Bechdel test. Like, while Piggy's energy is directed at like romance, Sprinkles' energy is directed at the sovereign reign of her territory. It's her and her business. I do allow her to be authentic. Like she does care for other people. And what's been some of the most powerful moments are when my followers can redeem like a queen's audience with like loyalty points if they stay in the channel a long time. And people will ask really deep questions of Sprinkles, like, you know, how do I cope when I'm grieving, or how do I cope when the imposter syndrome is too great, or something like that. And there's something magical about puppets and being able to deliver messages that might be difficult with the human. I've been surprised sometimes at what comes out when I'm channeling through Sprinkles and trying to connect with other people on difficult topics. So that's, she knows what she wants, but she also cares about people. And that's kind of what has kept us connected to her this whole time. Now, there certainly are some people who wander in and Twitch have no idea what's going on and bounce. Like, if I just played video games, I think it would be easier to grow the channel, but it's what we are. It makes us us.
So you said you started with puppets and Shakespeare.
Yes.
Why Shakespeare?
Oh, that's a fun, another random sort of tangent. I happen to have a lot of Shakespeare around the house because my husband is a professional actor, and he was trained classical acting. Like, he specializes in Shakespeare when he can. I mean, it's not produced everywhere. We actually met in a show, not a Shakespeare show, but I had been doing an improv show called Where No Man Has Gone Before, where it was an improvised parody of Star Trek that we had been doing for 9 years. And it's the weirdest thing. Like, a producer for a different scripted show actually saw me in Where No Man Has Gone Before and contacted me and asked me to come straight to callbacks for this small equity, which is the Actors Union, production of a new play. And for me, I'm not union. I do improv. Like, I've done script and I've done musicals, but it wasn't the kind of well-known in Seattle where people were just ringing my phone and being like, you want a role? You don't need to audition. So this was very new for me. And get called to callbacks. And there's two gentlemen at callbacks. One of them I wanted to work with and the other one I married. And that's because the two roles were not sympathetic. So he was very good at the role. And the other actor is very good, but his type, he ended up going on to be the role of Buddy the Elf in the national tour of Elf. So, you know, that's a very, you know, he does a lot of great stuff, but is more in that comedic realm. So anyway, we're in this show, romantic little show about two people who meet on September 10th, 2001, when their plane gets delayed overnight. So now I have this Shakespearean actor husband, and, you know, he quotes Shakespeare a lot. He's like practicing monologues around the house. And so it just felt like a way I could get closer to him. Because the ironic thing is, when I was in high school, we didn't actually, I don't know, maybe some listeners will identify this, maybe not. Like, I was technically in like gifted English, but we never studied Shakespeare. I have no idea why. Like, what were they thinking? And so I always felt like there was something missing. So it was a good excuse for me to play in that space. You probably didn't expect that long of an answer, but that's what you got. Also, it's free. You don't have any rights. And that's that's actually a really important topic for live streaming, is how not to get your content kicked off the internet. Like, if you just pick random songs on Spotify, if you just pick a random play, that's copyrighted content. And you will get a copyright strike either in the moment or afterwards, and your channel can get shut down. But the beauty of Shakespeare is that it's been around for so long that nobody can kick you off for doing it. So that's another excellent reason to play with it.
You went from, I would say, a structured, organized RPG live stream. How did you get from that to saying, I'm going to live stream myself doing scenes from, say, Shakespeare with a puppet? Where's that connecting tissue?
Great question. Curiosity is part of it. You know, it seemed like the odds were no one would show up. And then, you know, I would just have had this chance to experiment. And I did have this sense of this was a very specific moment in time. I knew that this show wouldn't last forever. I knew that this community wouldn't necessarily be paying attention to me and my work forever. Like, it was a very rare platform. And so I felt like I wanted to play in the space, learn more about it, because I was just fascinated by Twitch as a whole. That I think that curiosity led me to pursue stuff that was not just the show. Because the show was... You know, it sounds like a lot. And at the same time, it's just 3 hours a week because it's a live stream. So you just go in and out. That's it. There's no rehearsal. There's no nothing. It's just in and out. It's a very intense 3 hours. You're on to camera the whole time. There's no getting off camera. There's no hiding. You know, you don't control any of that. It's all the game master and it's all the things. So I also sort of loved watching the chat and wanted... And there were other sort of shows on that channel where they did get to interact directly with chat. And that seemed fun. You know, so I kind of wanted to see like what it was, even though you're not necessarily interacting directly with chat when I'm like doing a Shakespeare monologue. It felt like I could at least like, hey, after I did this little monologue, I could go and like see what people feel like. A lot of it was, though, I think maybe a lot of folks would identify with this feeling. I'm certainly not diagnosed with this specific type of neurospicy, but like I certainly have the pattern of get into hobby, but without forcing function, never follow through on hobby. And that had happened with the puppetry. I bought the puppets, I took the master class, and then nothing. And here's this thing, there's people who want to see me, they're curious about me, there's like this competition, I could do it right now. These conditions are not going to exist in a few months. So why don't we just get sprinkles on camera with the book and see what happens?
So tell me about that first time you're going live on Twitch with a puppet and Shakespeare. What happens?
Gosh, it's been so long. I don't know if I can even remember the first time. Like I can remember what it looked like. One thing that struck me was that people were supportive. And I wasn't expecting that. I was expecting to be like thrown off the internet. Now, why were they supportive? They were supportive because they came to see me because I had already been performing on another network, and they were, and I'd been building this relationship. So I am grateful that I was not playing at full difficulty class when we did this weird thing, like starting with the puppetry. I know a lot of people who try to start their channels. It can be very tough to get past those first couple viewers. Because how do you convince, if you don't have like a Twitter platform already, if you don't have a show already, if you don't have some way to get people in the door, how do you convince somebody who's stumbling around Twitch that what they actually want to do is watch puppetry? But folks were very encouraging. And then the second thing that was unexpected for me was the wanting to talk to the puppet. One thing I didn't fully understand was that what I could offer through the puppet had value, not just like scripts and things, but you know, that there was interest in doing work through a character or something like that. And then I had that in me. So that was something that we sort of discovered through the first couple sessions.
Tell me about the evolution of the show, because I caught some of your show on the weekend. There was no noticeable Shakespeare, at least not in the segments that I saw. How did it get to where it is today?
Yeah. And so the Shakespeare was very much like structure to, and A, it was a response to that Twitch creates contest thing. Like at the time, Twitch was trying to make fetch happen and like get plays and things on the channel or on the network. And so that was a response to that. There are logistical challenges. If I want to do that all the time, A, we'll run out of content. B, it's very hard to like hold. I don't have all those things memorized. Very hard to hold a script to do puppets and run a camera at the same time. And then there was the thing that like as a technologist and as a designer, I want to meet platforms where they are. And in reality, the thing that was kind of frustrating, I loved performing on, so the show on Hyper RPG was called Shadowrun Corporate Sins. And if you're curious, you could go watch it. All the episodes are on YouTube. I played a decker called Mainframe, and it was a lot of fun. But, you know, there wasn't that heavy interaction between me, human Cheryl, and the audience, but what makes Twitch Twitch and not Netflix is the interactivity. And scripts are not interactive. And so the more I did it, the more I realized that to be on Twitch, to be Twitch-like, to like, if I'm going to make this work, it needs to be different. It needs to be more live. And so we started to move more towards sprinkles interacting with the audience alongside me. You know, it took me building confidence that people were just going to run away and I'm a woman on the internet, right? So I was also worried about like what level of trolling I was going to get. But luckily, because I had already built relationships with people from this other channel, there were folks who were willing to mod for me who made it easier for me to do this crazy thing. And so we sort of moved in this direction. For a while, I had more free time. So we actually had two episodes a week. One was just sprinkles. And then the other one was a little bit of sprinkles. And then we would do games. And so it was like two flavors. Like we would do sprinkles and then there would be more. Like we'd take requests for her to dramatically read song lyrics like William Shatner, you know, and things like that. Which is a little borderline on copyright, but, you know, we would get, you know, we'd do small bits and we'd get away with it. But over time, as my jobs became more demanding, it was harder to find, and my acting became more regular in the improv world. It became difficult to have 2 days a week. And so those shows kind of merged, and we ended up with the Sunday show where we kept the first half hour of puppetry, and then the rest was traditional video gaming. Because at the end, you know, I'm also a gamer, and it was nice to have that excuse to play games I might not otherwise and discover them with my audience. And I'm deeply grateful that I did make that decision because it kept me connected to gaming while I was working in other parts of the industry. And I didn't realize it at the time, but that was preparation for my return to the gaming industry where I've been for the last, 4 or 5 years.
So I'm curious to know, because for me, when I hear Twitch, I know it's mostly people live streaming gaming sessions. I know there's a bit of board gaming sessions that I've watched, but your content, and apologies for calling it content, is a bit different. How common is that to see on Twitch something that is not pure gaming?
Not very. I mean, certainly there are things that are not pure gaming, but the thing is, Twitch's discoverability of content, like the ability to just discover random content, is not great. They experimented with a lot of different models, tagging, just random algorithms, and nothing ever really stuck. When it was smaller, they could just kind of put any random video that had enough views up for people, and you would get folks wandering in, and that's how I got a lot of my early followers. But in the end, a lot of companies find that you can't be everything to everyone, so you need to specialize. And Twitch is very much specialized largely in gaming. Now, I think there's a couple of subsets. There's like the craft subset. Like there's people who are makers and stream the making of things. And that's a legitimate subset. And there's enough people on Twitch doing that that you can probably discover random folks that you wouldn't normally find otherwise. Puppetry is not a big enough segment for people to find it. So, and there's not tags for like performance or any of that kind of stuff. There's a just chatting tag, which is for talk shows or whatever. And so there's certainly people who just go on Twitch to go on Twitch because it's actually, even if you're not gaming, it's very solid streaming platform. And it's actually one of the easier monetization platforms, to become an affiliate and get subscriptions and everything. The challenge is you're not going to get a ton of organic exposure because Twitch is built to expose gaming streams. So there's plenty of people who do the just chatting stuff, but it's hard for Twitch's algorithm to know who they should show you to because they don't have a lot of awareness within the just chatting channel. So if you're going to do something that's not gaming, it's more incumbent on you to go find your audience elsewhere. And I haven't been really focused on growth. I think I've been happy that the audience has been kind of stable. Because if you have explosive growth, a community can collapse under its own weight. You don't have enough mods. You're not prepared for raids. And B, because, I also have full-time jobs of fairly prominent gaming companies. And if my brand were to start distracting from that work, I might not be able to do both things. I don't do it because I'm seeking fame. I'm doing it because I value the community and I want to keep that going. And every Sunday that I interact with the community, it keeps me going. And it actually through the pandemic and everything, it felt social, and there's things to unpack about asymmetric relationships and things. And you as a creator, you have to be careful about what boundaries you set. But this community has been a wonderful community. They support each other, that they support me. I try to support them. And that keeps me making the time on Sundays.
Your channel sounds a bit different from most of what I would expect on Twitch, because I think the interaction with your community, with your audience, there's a lot more of that. I know a lot of people who stream, yes, they interact with the chat, they talk to people, but it's more about people watching them. Is this something that's important to you, having that bidirectional communication?
Great question. And yes, absolutely. Because when I interact with the system or technology, I want to use it to its greatest potential. And what makes Twitch, Twitch is that bi-directional nature of it. The magic, and I've felt it too. When I watch, I have a lot of friends who are streamers, and in the early days when I would watch and I would kind of go into their streams and they'd see me, they'd be like, oh, Funny Godmother's here. And if you're watching a stream on a 50-inch TV and the creator speaks to you while you're on it, there's something in your brain, or at least for me, raised in a maybe different era, that just is that's magic. Holy, the moving pictures talking to you specifically. And one thing I try to remind myself of is I'm lucky to have a platform. So I can interact with other people, but a lot of people don't. And so it's of value to have a community where you can feel like your attendance matters. And it doesn't, you know, it's tough with scale, right? It's tough to, if I had tens of thousands or millions of people in there at once, it would be very difficult. But that feeling that the stream is different because I was there, I think is very precious to the Twitch live streaming experience. And I tried to experiment with that later because I was doing professional improv in Seattle. I might go back to do that. We'll see. But I directed a fully online improv show called Cupid on Mute, where it was like a 5-week limited run series. But there's a donation platform called Tiltify. And one of the things on Twitch is you can set it up so that if people donate to you or if people subscribe to you, you can get live notifications. So you as a streamer can thank them and acknowledge, because in the end, good game design, like you get good feedback for doing good things. But Tiltify integrates with charitable organizations so that that money doesn't go through you, the streamer, which is very complicated. So people could donate to charitable organizations, but you still get the notifications. So I had my theater, Unexpected Productions, set up with Tiltify so people could donate to them. And then I worked through them to cast fellow actors from Unexpected Productions. And instead of selling tickets, I basically structured a game design for the show. And people could just watch, or they could donate to interact with and change the flow of the show. It was basically a sort of a Love is Blind kind of romance show. And so they could donate to force two characters to have a scene together. They could donate a bunch of money to like sponsor the next episode and like name a company that we'd have to reference over and over again. You'd use smaller amounts of money to like vote for things and things like that. We actually raised just about as much money as you would from a live production when you take out all of the overhead costs and things like that. Now, some of that's because my community is very generous, but it was really fun to see how people self-expressed through that media. And that two-way interaction is really important. And that was all inspired by that work on that role-playing game, Shadowrun Corporate Sins. Players could donate, could tip the studio $10 to give us extra dice in a challenge to make our characters more likely to succeed. And that was how the studio kept their lights on and paid the salaries and things like that. And I was blown away by how much people interacted with that to show. And it, sometimes it was is just to show their alignment with something that had happened in the show. There's a moment a few weeks into the run where my character holds hands with another character who had admitted having feelings for me in another scene. So my character didn't know. And so, you know, shipping culture, people kind of being interested in romances and things like that. Thousands of dollars started flowing in through dice donations. My mom, after the show, was like, "Who got you an engagement ring's worth of dice?" And that, to me, just spoke to like how important that bi-directional thing is. Even when people aren't necessarily able to like verbally express themselves, that ability to interact with the program and have it be different for them being there is what makes Twitch Twitch to me.
You mentioned earlier that people ask Sprinkles questions. Sprinkles answers viewer questions. How did that start?
Probably very organically. I probably ran out of scripts or ran out of plans and just... because I'm an improviser, just like, oh, sure, she could answer that. Do you want to ask Sprinkles a question?
Sure. Let me ask Sprinkles. Hey, Sprinkles, Cheryl said earlier that doing this live streaming has kind of renewed her faith in the goodness of the internet, which is not a small task. Why do you think that is?
Well, you know, one thing I appreciate about the people who come into our streams is how much they appreciate me. They have good taste. But I think what Cheryl's getting at is that, you know, the folks there are, you know, they're curious. They lead with curiosity about each other. They want to know what's going on in everybody's lives. And a lot of times on the internet, from what I've seen, there's just a lot of telling you what you should be or what you are. I'm not into that. I know what I am. I'm queen of this office. I'm the best thing about the stream. So I appreciate that these folks see each other for who they want to be.
Thank you, Sprinkles. And Cheryl, thank you so much. Where can people find you?
Well, on most social networks, they can find me at Funny Godmother, you know, like the fairy godmother, but funny. on TikTok. It's the Cheryl Platts, because they did funny story. They started scanning usernames. They didn't like that there was God in my username, so they just sort of shadow banned me until I could figure that one out. So I'm the Cheryl Platts there. CherylPlatts.com if you'd like more information about me and my work. And to find my books, RosenfeldMedia.com. You can buy directly from my publisher, my first book, Design Beyond Devices, or check out information about my second book, Enduring Play, Creating Video Games That Thrive. And you may also purchase my book from Amazon or talk to your local bookstore about carrying it, as we're, you know, distributed by Ingram. You can ask for it from your local library and have them order it, whatever you like. I guess one thing I should mention is if you'd like to join me on Twitch, probably the most important thing. If you'd like to join me on Twitch, most Sundays, unless I'm traveling or unless there's a holiday, I stream at twitch.tv/funnygodmother. And we typically stream at 1 p.m. Eastern or 10 a.m. Pacific for approximately 3 hours, give or take. And the first 30 minutes of that is when Sprinkles really comes out and shines. And then we typically transition over to video games or maybe writing for the next couple months while I'm writing my book.
That is awesome. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Of course. Thank you so much, Guy. It was fun.
This is all for this episode of Design Downtime. Thank you for joining me. And until next time, I hope you enjoy your downtime.